What's up, guys? This is Uriah Faber, the California Kid, here with Greg Conley, serial entrepreneur, founder of Trifecta Nutrition. We're talking about everything under the sun, fitness, entertainment, and of course, business, making that money.
So are you the headline of the...
Yeah, the main event.
What UFC
big show, bro.
UFC damn. On Fox 28.
UFC. Oh, shit.
That beard is going to see a lot of action. Actually,
it's a first, man.
Yeah, he's.
I've never done it, so it's like I can't do anything
UFC
up
on
here.
Fox.
Yeah, 28.
Looks legit. You know, at least you got the
it's
full
like
beard.
3 weeks too, and they keep trimming it. You know,
yeah,
it's crazy.
I know some people, Jason, they can't grow a full beard. That sucks.
I can't grow it up here.
He's got other gifts that we don't have.
He's like, happy wife. She doesn't care about the beard. Okay, fuck you guys.
Let's do it, guys. Ready?
Yep.
Are you ready? 1, 2, 3. What's up, guys? Back at the Cali Cast. My boy Greg Conley here.
What's up, guys?
Took a break from making money and business decisions to be here and talk about sports, nutrition, business, combat, and everything under the sun. Today we have a very special guest, a good friend of mine, somebody who I've spent a lot of time with, sometime fighting with the guy, actually punching each other in the face, slamming each other, submitting each other, which is a very unique situation. Headlining a massive card, and this is the first time headlining a big card, or any card for that matter, in the UFC, and it's getting closer to that title shot. That's Josh Emmett here to join us today. What's up, Josh?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me on.
No problem. And for those who don't know, Josh has been one of the staples of our team for a lot of years, but kind of under-celebrated because there's been a lot of stars throughout the years on our team, Team Alpha Male, for those that don't know. And, you know, it's been 8 years, I think, now on the grind. A couple of broken hands, a couple of missed opportunities where we're knocking on the door of the UFC and they're not answering. And it's been a quick rise for Josh from zero to stepping into the UFC on 3 days' notice, going over to, where was it?
Rotterdam.
Rotterdam.
So I hopped on a plane, flew to the Netherlands, a four-day notice.
Four-day notice to fight.
Damn.
The worst hand injury in UFC history to crack off my debut.
What round was it when you did that?
The third round with like 3 minutes left.
So let me build this up for you. Josh has been trying to get in the UFC for years, not because he didn't have the ability, but just there weren't any openings. By the time we get him in the door, he just has to stay ready. It's a 3 to 4 day notice. He flies all the way to
Rotterdam.
Can't sleep because he's so excited. Plus the time difference, et cetera, et cetera. Has to make weight. And in the fight, is dominating and busts his finger open. So it's dislocated and the bone comes out of the skin. And you see Josh kind of look down at it and shake it off and like look down and continue that round and then continue another round and finish the fight and get a big W. Well, what was going through your head when you see the bone sticking out of your finger?
Like, so first off, like going back to that, you know, the only people that believed in me were you guys, my teammates, coaches, family, and friends. So there was nothing that was going to stop me from winning that fight.
Yeah.
Even a finger. If I lost a finger, so be it. But he threw a spinning heel kick. I went to go parry it, and it must have just hit it like the right force, right angle. And just like Uriah said, the bone was just – it was sticking right out. It was just hanging there by the flesh, you know, and the glove was actually helping it. So it was kind of weird. Every time he would kick and I would block it, I would see sweat coming out of the side of my eye. So I kept looking down because I thought he kicked my finger off several times. and at that point,
no big deal. Did I just lose a finger?
Hey, it was just a finger though. So I wasn't letting that get in the way. And so they actually, he kicked me in the groin. The ref stopped it to see if I was okay. I actually had to hide my finger because I knew if he saw it or a doctor saw it, they would stop the fight and I would lose the fight, you know? So I just kept fighting. I wanted to get back in there as soon as possible. And I pulled off the win. So
that's awesome. It was like, I mean, I see him hiding his finger and saying he's okay. And then going out there, and I've been in that situation. I've broke my hand in the first round of a 5-round fight, and I dislocated my thumb in the 3rd round. I had no hands fighting for a world championship in front of my hometown. And it's a weird thing. I mean, it's not like something you prepare for necessarily. Mm-hmm. You don't ever think, oh, what's going to happen if my bone sticks out of my finger? Or, you know, or you break your hands, you have no hands, and you're fighting a guy who's a world champion. You know, it's just instinct kicks in, and you're either made for that kind of crap or you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to, you know, point out today, for example, and Greg, you can not relate to this. This guy fought 6 different guys today, or I think maybe 4 guys in 6 different rounds. How crazy is that? Just to think about some of the best fighters on the planet this morning, and I was in there coaching practice and watching. You know, you're just basically beating the crap out of each other. It's one of the scariest things. Have you ever been in a fist fight?
Oh, yeah.
Some good ones. That's one of the scariest things going into. And I remember going into a fist fight before I was trained at it. You know, even thinking about a fight was a scary thing. If it was a planned ahead of time, you know, you have a, say you're a little kid and you're supposed to meet at the park or something like that. What a dreadful time.
Oh, yeah.
The build up to a fight, you know? So, you know, it's funny to think about the lifestyle that we live. But, yeah, I just watched Josh beat the crap out of some guys this morning, take some punches, give some punches, and just made me realize I'm glad I'm kind of retired at this point.
I mean, how often does that, like, injuries like that happen? And can your corner, like, secretly try and tape that a little bit for you, or you don't want to give it away to the refs type thing?
I think that was just a freak accident. Mm-hmm. But I think, like you're right, I said, it's either you can, you know, deal with it, or a lot of people would want out, you know.
They a lot of people do get out.
Or they would show the ref, and then they would instantly stop it. Like, that's a big thing for me when, you know, when people get poked in the eye, and maybe that goes to the doctor, and it's like a 5-minute, you know, they have a 5-minute time frame, and they're like, can you see? And they're like, no. You know, they won out, kind of. I don't care if you can't see.
Oh, yeah.
I can't see.
You're going to keep fighting with one eye.
If you get kneed on the ground, it barely grazes you on the ground, your hands and hands are down, it's illegal. So, like, if I win if I sit this one out. You see that kind of stuff
happening. And then
happening,
they're just faking it. You know, it's like, that kind of drives me crazy, and I'll never do that. So knowing the outcome, I'll just say, yep, I'm good to go.
Mm-hmm. Greg, when was the last time you got in a fight? I want to hear one of your fight stories. Any good ones? Any good ones you won? Any bad ones you lost?
Well, I mean, I had a older brother who was 2 years older than me, so I've lost a whole bunch of them. But
I've been there.
But I mean, some of the best ones.
Notable ones that are like stand out that are a good story?
Yeah, I had a guy I lived with, and, you know, long story short, we were having a dispute over the bills. You know, we had been longtime friends, and it just got to the point where we were so broke in college. I mean, I was like phenomenally broke.
You have a master's in being broke from college?
Oh, yeah. I had
the same thing.
Yeah, I had, was arguing with my parents at the time, you know, so I couldn't talk to them about money. You know, they weren't even talking to me. And our power got shut off. And my roommate was super pissed. He happened to be growing a couple now legal, used to be illegal plants at the time in the house. So obviously he was going to be fucked if, you know, we didn't get the power turned back on. And I was like, you know, bro, it's not my problem. Like, you know, none of us can afford it, et cetera, et cetera. And that was just the wrong answer. And he shoved me, and I socked him in the face. And then we, like, you know, we pretty quickly went to the ground, and he was trying to, like, fish hook me. And I'm
sitting
there.
Why those moves are illegal. They're great for street fights. Eye gouging, biting, fish hooking, hitting the nuts, pulling hair, attacking the spine, the top of the head. Those are all legal in a fight. So if you're in a real fight, do all that shit.
Yeah. I mean, I was like sitting there. I laugh about it now because I was like contemplating, like, do I bite my friend's finger off because he's fish hooking me? You know, that's like literally what was going through my head. So, yeah, I mean, that type of stuff is obviously anything goes in, you know, street fight situations. And then I've had other ones that, you know, you're kind of – I haven't gotten a fist fight in, you know, over a decade at this point.
Right.
But, you know, young, getting drunk at the bars, I've, you know,
had
people talk shit in the wrong way. And it sounded like you had one in Chico that was
Had a good one
similar
to
me.
I had a great one in Chico. I'll get into that a little later.
Yeah, so, you know, I had a guy that in an alley when I was walking home, I don't know if I looked at him funny or what the situation was, but – he ended up flashing on me, and this is also illegal in the UFC, I believe. He like got right up in my face and I was like, fuck it, I'm just gonna headbutt him. I just headbutted him and just crumpled him. I don't know if I broke his nose or not because I fled from the scene, but yeah.
Got the street cred. I like that.
Yeah, now, so
Josh, you went to Menlo College.
Yeah.
And who else went? Danny Castillo went to Menlo College as well?
Yeah, Danny went there. He was before my time. Carla Sparza, Ashley Evans-Smith,
okay.
Cody Gibson, and my buddy Lee. They all fight, and there's a bunch of us that were in the UFC. Yeah. You know,
bunch of
crazy.
Thugs, man.
Yeah. Out at a private college in Atherton.
Yeah. So how was that experience? Did you like wrestling in college, or did you wrestle all four years?
No, I wrestled 3 years. Redshirted my first year and then wrestled two because I wrestled 2 years at Sac City. So I only had a few years left. But no, it was good.
Sac City, Coach Pacheco.
Pacheco and Walt.
And Walt.
Yeah, I love those guys.
I got in a great fight in Tahoe and Walt saved me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I fought this guy in the back alley of like right on the like a back lawn behind a grocery store in Tahoe.
Safeway. And
yeah, this big old tall guy. And his buddy was gonna come up with a glass bottle, and about to hit me in the head with it. I was on top of the dude, and Walter came flying. Much love to you, Walt. Flying like this, and I just see Walt fly over me and just take this dude out and crumble down a hill. It was awesome. Wow. Yeah.
Was it one of the wrestling camps?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was awesome. Hitchcock has a video up there in Tahoe.
That's funny.
Did you ever get any fist fights in college?
Yeah, a few. Like, I always got in. Nothing
you don't
like,
strike me as somebody that
nothing big. Like, yeah. I've never been in an all-out, just complete brawl. You know, I've been in, like, scuffles here and there. People throwing some punches, and then it gets broken up. But out of my friends, like, I'm the smallest one. I'm sure you're the same way. Right. So it's like, if anything happened, they would always turn to me and start messing with me. And then my friends would be like, that's probably the least person you want to mess with.
Yeah, the last person.
But, yeah, we've been in some, I don't know. A few big things, but nothing for too long.
Nothing in Chico?
Oh, nothing in Chico.
I had a good Chico story. I'm seriously, I was sitting in Chico, and I don't even know what bar it was.
I think it was the Bear from what you described, yeah.
Maybe, I don't even remember, but I'm sitting there, and they have these big joint tables. So I'm sitting at the front of the table, and there's like these three big Mexican guys sitting at the back of the table, all wearing wife beaters at the bar, which is kind of weird. And then there was somebody had spilled a drink like in the middle, and I'm sitting there talking to my friend Matt Kelly from elementary school, Matty Little Fatty we called him. He was like tiny little skinny guy, but that was his nickname for whatever reason. And I hadn't seen him since, I mean, it had been years since I had seen him, and I was just catching up with him. I was like super passionate about seeing him. And I had started fighting, but just barely started fighting, you know, and fighting Indian casinos and stuff. And this Mexican guy keeps trying to get me my attention, and he's like, hey, you tell me to clean this thing up, this drink up. And I just like looked at it, and I just ignored him. It wasn't my drink. I didn't know he was even talking to me. He's like, hey, you hear what I said, motherfucker? Clean that shit up. And I looked at him. I said, that's not my drink, man. And I just turned back around, and he gets up and gets in my face, and he goes, clean that shit up or we're going to step outside. And I think I had one fight at this time, but I was, you know, I wrestled in college, I was top 12 in the nation, and I'm not about to get bullied by anybody, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, bro, I told you that's not my drink. I said, if you want to walk outside, I'll walk out with you, but I'm just warning you, you don't want to do that. And he's like, would you say, little punk? And like gets in my face. And I just get up and start walking outside. And he's following me outside. And he's saying, you don't want to do this. You don't want to do this. And I keep on walking. I walk across the street, and there's like a fraternity house with a lawn on it, like literally like one house and then the fraternity house. And so I go, what's up, motherfucker? Like that. And turn around on the grass and just fucking drilled him. And I still have the scar right here on my knuckle. See, that's his tooth.
Yeah.
Right there. Chad Mendes has an identical scar on the same knuckle, too. It's from a similar college story. But and I drop him, and I get on top of him, and I'm just beating the crap out of him. And he's a big dude. He's like 6'1", maybe 215 or something like that. And then all the fraternity guys come out, and they're like gathered around because we're on the front lawn. And I've got him by the neck, and I'm just choking him. And I said, you still got a problem with him? You know, I'm like talking to him. And he's like... And I go, I'm going to let you go, but you need to settle the hook down. He's like, all right. So I let him go. And all the fraternity guys were just standing there. And they're like, "What's up, guys?" They weren't even clapping. They were just like watching, you know. They weren't like into it or not into it. They were just like it looked like a zoo or something. And then he guys just sitting there like breathing, just blood all over his face. And I just walked back over and said hi to my buddy, and that was it.
Back to the bar.
Back to the bar.
And the beer.
Chico, little Chico.
Yeah, I mean, that's specifically why I haven't gotten into a fight in the last 10 years, because I don't want to stumble across one of you two motherfuckers. Like,
you never know now.
Oh, yeah. Like, the person who's nicest to you at the bar, and you're, like, pushing them like that, and they're like, oh, no, you know, I'm totally fine, is probably, like, the Navy SEAL. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you want to... The people that are usually talking the loudest are the people that aren't actually in fights, and the people that are the chillest are going to kill you.
That's exactly like Josh. We have a end of the year banquet every year. What's the award that you got?
Sickest prick.
He got the sickest prick award. And so we have this big piece of wood that looks like a club that I found out in the wilderness, and it's going to be a tradition. He's the first one to win the sickest prick award. It's basically the guy that walks quiet but carries a big stick, because this guy, you never hear a peep out of him. You know, he's just like, I mean, those are the guys you have to watch out for. I mean, what in your personality or in your background encouraged you to become a fighter? What was the thing that made you think, like, I want to do this, then I really want to do this, and I want to make a living out of this, especially after all the ups and downs? Like, what did that journey look like, and what was kind of the motivation, and what was the thought process? And
probably for me, it's just it all stemmed from wrestling, you know, and there's nothing else for me to do. I've always been a huge fan of MMA and thought I could do it. It was actually, it was kind of humbling when I used to watch it before it was mainstream. I was like, oh, I could beat that guy up, you know? And then I started coming into your gym when you opened it in 2005. And I was like, man, I would have got killed. Honestly, I was watching the UFC saying I could beat these guys up. And I was like, no way in hell. So then after that, just you know, training and taking the classes at your gym. And I feel like I'm athletic. I've played every sport. I do really well at really anything. And I would catch on quick. And, you know, I just fell in love with that the same way I fell in love with wrestling. And, you know, then when I went away to college for 3 years because I wanted to get my degree and get better at wrestling so I would get better at fighting. So I came back in 2010. And had a few amateur fights, loved it, did well, and then I just wanted to make a run at the UFC.
Yeah,
you know, and that's
what was the first injury? You had a real bad hand injury, and then it happened again, right?
Yeah.
What year was that?
So that was it was my first pro fight. I fought in Uriah's boxing ring in his gym.
Yeah. Oh, those are the best fights, ghetto ass illegal fights, pretty much.
And you guys just have people place bets on them, or how does it work?
No, they pay to get in and watch the fight. And, oh, nice.
And it was pricey, too. The tickets were like $40-$50. Yeah. Get in his gym, they'd pack the gym, and I fought in the boxing ring. It's in the back outside of his new gym now. But, yeah, I went in there. It was the first 45 seconds. I took the guy down, and I just threw an overhand left, and I just hit him just weird angle right on his forehead and snapped my second metacarpal in half.
Yeah. It helps this guy hits like a freaking truck. I mean, mm-hmm. This guy's got power, man.
So I'm fighting. I'm like, this doesn't feel right. It's literally, I feel the bone just flopping around in my glove. So I go back into the corner and I tell my cornerman, I'm like, hey, my hand's broken. They're like, throw that straight right, take him down, hit him with elbows. And I did just that. Got the win there. And then,
who was in your corner for that fight?
It was Danny Castillo and Buckles.
Oh, nice.
And then they cornered me for my first two amateur fights also.
Yeah.
And UFC debut. And then
so that was how long was that recovery? What year was that?
That was 2000. I think it was 2011. It was like the fall classic at his gym or something like that.
We used to call it the house that JoJo built. We had this like kind of like portly Mexican dude that would just always spar with everyone. And like he was like not the best athlete or ever, but he would have these fights that were pretty much amateur
is
fights.
Is he still at the gym now?
No, no.
Oh, okay.
He had like been in a car accident and so he had a settlement. And so he's like, you know what? I always wanted to be a fighter. So he was just in the gym and like kind of changed his life around. And he used to put on the best fights. He wasn't fast or anything. And he was willing to get punched. So it was like always back and forth battles. And everybody would always be on their feet with this JoJo. So he's called the house that JoJo built.
That's funny.
Yeah. So how long was that recovery?
Yeah,
process?
So it was about 10 months. So I had to have surgery. Ugh. surgery, and then I was I did all the physical therapy, everything like that. I came back, I was training for my second pro fight, and I had a good camp going. And then my very last sparring session, my last round too, I broke it again, and I had 16-ounce gloves on. I hit it with a hard jab. I hit Vinny in the bridge of his nose, split his nose open, snapped my hand again. Ugh. And then that was another 10-month layoff. And the reason why it happened is because come to find out, the next doctor I went to, he saw the previous x-rays, and the doctors at Kaiser, not a big fan of them, they said it like this.
You know? Not a shout out for Kaiser.
Yeah, not at all. And so they said it wrong. So he's like, no wonder why you broke your hand, you know? Mm-hmm. And he was like an old guy. So he's like, I was like, should I put a plate on there? Because I didn't know what to do. And he's the doctor. He's like, oh, no, because if you break it again, it'll be a mess, you know? So I listened to him, nothing. And then he said it wrong. And then I broke it again, but.
How do you set? I mean, look, either it's aligned or it's not aligned.
Jeez. Wait, did you get a plate the second time?
No, I didn't. The doctor actually
just reset it again.
Reset it, and it was the way it should be. And it's been good ever since.
So you're like Darth Vader over here with like robot hand and shit.
It's this hand. I have some bad luck with it.
Yeah.
You know, I broke my jaw, everything, you know.
When did you break your jaw?
That's a crazy story. In college, like going back to the fighting stuff. So I went out with some coworkers. We were walking downtown. It was in the summer of Palo Alto.
Now, were you kind of a wild guy back in the day?
I liked to party.
It's hard for me. It's funny because, like I said, you don't hear a peep from this guy. You know, after a win, after a loss, after whatever, he's just steady keel. And then somebody said that Josh used to be a fucking wild man.
Party still, like, I can't do that anymore because it's all bad. If I start drinking, I think I'm in college and I'll be out of commission for a week or so. But yeah, we went out for some drinks. We were walking, just walking home, and like out of the corner of my eye, I saw this guy. He was just laying on the street. He was on his stomach. A guy was kicking him in the face. Other guy hitting him on his, like, the back of his head. And I just saw that without thinking. I ran over there. The guy that was on him, I pushed him into a car. The guy that was kicking him in the face was going to come up to me. I'm like, okay, I'm going to fight this guy. As soon as he gets close, I'm going to hit him in his chin. And then I just got sucker punched. And then they were with like four or five guys.
Oh, wow.
And then basically.
Trying to be a hero.
Yeah, I shouldn't have done that, but I'll do it again. yeah, and then, this time then it turns out I'm like fighting, guys. I guess, from the witnesses. I'm fighting on my feet, but I'm out. I don't remember any of this. And then, you know, they're doing the same thing to me. And it was just bad. It was guys from East Palo Alto, these big like Tongan guys. But the good thing is, so I went to the emergency at Stanford, and the guy that I kind of helped, he was in a neck brace. His face was purple and black, looked like someone beat him up with a baseball bat. And the doctor came in and said, if you didn't do that, or he said, you know, you saved his life. He could be dead if you didn't do that. And I was like, you know, even knowing the outcome, I'll do it again. But I broke this side in half, and then I shattered this side.
Oh.
And that's the reason why I have that tattoo. It's the x-ray of my skull with the plate on it. Yeah.
Let me see.
See? So it has that and the plates right there.
Ah.
So that's why I have that.
I've never even looked at that thing. Not
yeah,
in depth.
So, no, but it was it was horrible, like, recovery. Then that was, you know, mouth wired shut for 6-7 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
It was right then. That's one of the main reasons I redshirted in high school, and I tore my MCL pretty bad. But it was that same year, you know,
in college.
Yep, at Menlo. Yeah,
gotcha. That's crazy. So, you know, aside from being a quiet, tough guy and a former party animal who's got some real battle wounds, you've also been a businessman, and that's part of what we talk about here is, you know, the health and nutrition side of things, the fight game, but also the business side. And you've had Movement CrossFit before and had the struggles and the joy and the whole experience of being an owner of a gym and an owner of a business. What was that like, especially as you're juggling, you know, being an athlete with maintaining that and having, you know, your wife, who's your high school sweetheart, who's alongside with you on that deal. What were some of the lessons learned, and how'd you like being a business owner?
No, I really enjoyed it. It was, it just came with a lot of responsibility, which, you know, but I was able to do what I loved, and that was fighting, and I was able to pursue that. So basically I had it was my wife and I and our two good friends. We opened a CrossFit gym, and we ran that for about almost 6 years, 5 years. And it was nice because I could, you know, I could go to practice, and then I could come back, train my clients, go back to practice, just bounce back and forth, you know, between classes and personal training.
Yeah, basically a creative way to fund and create a lifestyle around exercise, fitness, and combat.
Yeah, and that's the same thing. Like, even when I first got out of college, we moved back in with our best friends, and I worked at a group home on the weekend. So I'll do like 14, 15 hour shifts just Saturday and Sunday so I could train full time too. But no, I really enjoyed that.
What were some of the, so at this point now you've focused more on just training. We've actually talked about having you kind of implement some of the business of your prior business within my gym, and we're excited about doing that. What were some of the lessons learned in the business side of things that you just carry over for your next experience? And you know, is there aspirations once you're done with fighting to have some more business endeavors, or would you, you know, look for a real job? Are you hoping to retire at the you know, from all the cash you make from beating people up? Like, what did you think about that experience?
Yeah, so one of the biggest things I learned was to have everything in writing, first off, because when we first got into opening this gym, we got screwed out of some stuff, and it was a big learning experience for sure. I feel like we kind of got scammed into some things, and the guy, it was his part of his plan all along.
So
that's like the biggest.
This was the building owner, or
It was actually one of our business partners.
Oh, really?
You know, and it was a bad situation.
It was a thought out process. This wasn't something that went down.
No, yeah, and it had nothing to do with the movement. It was like we were all friends working out at this other gym. We had the opportunity to be like a small shareholder of this other gym, and we put in quite a bit of money. We were all excited. We were running the whole thing, and he wasn't transparent at all. You know, we couldn't see, you know, the statements. We couldn't see any of the stuff, which we were entitled to. So it all ended with, you know, we had to get attorneys involved, and obviously we won because we were in the right, and he settled, That was the biggest thing that I learned about business. You know, even though like I'm a man of my word, if I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it.
Right.
But for a lot of other people, we just got to get that on paper.
Get it on paper. I'm learning the same lessons.
Yeah, because you don't want to get screwed out of certain things. And as far as after fighting, yeah, I would love to, you know, have my own gym or whatever it may be, or, you know, follow in your footsteps and, you know, be an entrepreneur and, you know, I've met a lot of people and I have connections, and I'm working on some other things as well. You know, first and foremost, it's fighting right now. And then
everything else will fall into place.
Yeah, exactly.
I will say about Josh, everybody in the community, I mean, I feel like, you know, being a hometown guy has a lot of benefits. And I always run into people, affluent people that are you know, doing big things in the community, and they're always talking about Josh. Oh, I've known Josh for this. I've known Josh for years. And you've got a good, like, homegrown network of people here. So I think business is something that is definitely in your future. And obviously, you know, we've got our friendship and relationship, and I'm sure we'll do some stuff in the future as well. Greg, for somebody that is, you know, a businessman and building a massive business right now and been part of other business endeavors, what are some of the lessons that you think are most important? I mean, he's talking about getting things in writing, the transparency. Today we had in the office here, we had Spirit Day, and your sister got a big pie in the face,
pie
and
it's kind
of building culture.
The company culture.
Yeah. What do you think are the most important things when it comes to the business side of things?
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously,
I always like to get guys that have the potential and the desire, you know, a little insight. So this is good for interaction in ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And totally agree with what you're saying. Always get everything in writing, because relationships start out and everybody's on the same page, and you ultimately have to think of, like, what's the worst case scenario if things go really bad and we hate each other? You know what I mean? Like, then how's the other person going to feel, type thing? And that's why it's, like, always good to have, you know, everything in writing, because when someone in the relationship feels like they're getting wronged, you know, then ultimately, you know, they're going to act completely differently than they are at the beginning. So yeah, no, that's a great lesson. I think a lot of people can take away, especially athletes. You know, I know a lot of athletes that, you know, they'll start relationships, especially with really small brands that are just getting started off. And then, you know, the brand doesn't know what they can expect from the athlete. The athlete doesn't know what they can expect from the brand. They both make a bunch of big promises. And then when some of that doesn't work out, you know, they end up in a situation where neither of their expectations were met. And I think expectations themselves are really the key to business. You know, for most people, if you do what you say you're going to do, then that like sets a, you know, a precedence with the, you know, the entire relationship. And when people feel like they're getting wronged, it's when you set a certain expectation, like I'm going to, you know, pay you this amount of money or give you this amount of transparency into the business or, you know, do this with the building or whatever it is. And then that stuff doesn't happen. There may be a reason for that, but you still, you know, set the person's expectation that it was going to happen. And that's for me, something I try and manage very well, especially with a growing business now where we work with, you know, hundreds of athletes, is, you know, set really good expectations with partners of like, you know, oh, we can do, you know, this now, we'll be able to do this in the future, or, you know, we can ship this amount of meals now, you know, or be able to do this in the future with investors. It's really kind of making sure everybody's on the same page. And, you know, the same goes with your team. You know, your team and staff want
everybody know their roles and
If they know what to expect, they can really execute against those expectations. So, you know, that was a huge lesson for me, because I tend to be on like the sales and marketing side where I'm like, oh, we're going to, you know, be $1 billion company next week, you know, type thing. And in actuality, it's going to take like 3 to 5 years.
Optimistic.
Like, yeah, exactly. So like, you know, I tend to be overly optimistic. And, you know, as I've gotten older, I've kind of dialed that back and I'm like, yeah, we're growing like crazy. But, you know, we have to like scale things up, you know, as we go with things.
So I've had to do that too, is, you know, I get excited and have the vision and talk about things. And then, you know, you want to overpromise, underdeliver. It's, for me, I like to, you know, underpromise, overdeliver, which is not always the easiest thing to do, because especially for startups, et cetera, you have to get people excited and they have to see the vision. And not everybody is a leader or sees the big picture or even can comprehend or visualize massive success. I would say that's the biggest thing, and I've talked about this, and you know, when I talk to companies or talk to groups of folks for speaking engagements, is just thinking big, etc. And that's something that I'm gonna give Josh credit for never losing that dream, even though he had all these ups and downs and you know, all the things that have happened on his journey to now being, you know, ranked number 4th in the world, undefeated in a weight class, you know, headlining on Major Fox, which is, that's Big Fox. There's only, what, 5 major stations. And he's headlining on a big event in the Super Bowl of the sport of mixed martial arts in the UFC. And
we're like, and, no pressure.
No. Yeah, no, but I mean, this is something that I know that he's envisioned and he's seen his friends do and his peers do. And he's known for a long time that, hey, I'm just as good as these guys, and I should be there too, and not losing that, not getting frustrated, not getting, you know, discouraged. So
and it was close too, you know. It's like with my age, if I didn't get in the UFC at the end of 2016, I was done fighting.
Yeah.
And I was gonna go contribute to society and get a regular job.
Yeah.
You know, or if I lost one of my regional shows or fights, I was probably gonna be done. You know.
Yeah, it was so. Like a fine line of like, you know, that picture of the miner. Like takes his shovel and leaves, and the gold is like right on the other side of the wall.
That's crazy to think about.
That was me for so long. Yeah. So long.
He's like, I'm going home. Nope. Just barely had that opportunity. When he got that opportunity, took it and ran. And it's that think big mentality. Like when I talked to Greg about his vision for business, it's, hey, hundreds of millions than billions. That's the way he's talking, which I get inspired by that kind of talk, even if it's not the reality right now. I like being around people that have that same vision, and I've met so many people that have been there, and they're just regular folks, billionaires. I've got a bunch of friends that are, you know, have jets and have you know, the B word as part of their status, and they're just regular dudes, like the same stuff, like exactly the same stuff, having a good time, being around good people, controlling their time, and have the same trials and tribulations. It's just a thought process that's different and finding a way. So
yeah, absolutely. And I mean, for you, especially now that you're in this kind of blow up phase of your career, I've you know, seen a lot of athletes go through this, and the arguably the biggest nugget since you're already a, you know, have been a business owner, et cetera. You know, we title sponsor the CrossFit games, love the CrossFit space. You know, thinking of yourself, and this goes for everybody, you know, watching this, thinking of yourself as a business, even though you are the athlete, is hugely attractive to your business partners, because we have athletes that come and they're like, oh, I have this amount of followers, you know, and that's like their big sell is how many followers they have. And then we have athletes that come and they're like, oh, I've got this website, you know, I have this amount of people on my email list, you know, da, da, da. And they like clearly get it from a business standpoint, because you know, Conor McGregor's not out there thinking of himself as like a sponsored athlete. Yeah, he's like, course. I'm the fucking boss. Yeah. I'm running the business. You know, Uriah is a great example of that, where it's, you know, he's got the gym, he's got his hands in all these different companies that he's got, you know, equity in, you know, Trifecta included. And it's, you know, thinking about that early stage and putting in that groundwork as you blow up, as opposed to, you know, we work with a lot of, especially NFL players that, they'll start focusing on the business when they're like in their twilight years in the league. Yeah. And that's like the worst fucking time to capitalize on your fame. You know what I mean?
And I've done that even since I was fighting regionally. You know, I try to go out and get sponsors, do t-shirts, sell as much tickets as possible, because I know I'm the business. And you get those guys that are just like, I just love to fight. You know, I'm like, but you're making $500. I'm going to make 14 grand on a little show, you know? So I'm trying to do that. And I totally understand. And that's one good thing to, you know, I've seen Uriah do those type of things, you know, and it's a good person to have as a mentor, and just following his footsteps, like I said.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you're out bearding him right now.
YouTube, man, 3 weeks.
Yeah. I don't know if I'll ever be able to grow a beard. I've come to terms with that. Is what it is. I have, like, you know, Joe Dirt would just grow a natural mullet. I do a natural Fu Manchu right here, like this. Just a little hair here and there.
Keeps you looking baby faced.
Yeah, you know, I guess so. At least it covers up the chin on occasion. this thing's getting bigger throughout the years. It's literally an asset. what else is going on? We've got some big fights coming up. I think, you know, one of the coolest things that I've seen with our team is just the ability to have so many guys and have them operationally work. You know, we have almost 18, 19 guys that are UFC fighters now. Whether they come in and do their training camps or they're homegrown or whatever. And it's cool to see all the different moving parts of our team coming together, and even helping out with food and getting systems down with you know, how practices work and coaches going here and doing that. And it's funny, the most consistent guys are having the best success. And there's a real emphasis on structure for the team. Like, here's the practice that you do, and then there's a real emphasis on individualism, you know, where guys are saying, oh, well, I need a little bit more of this, I need a little bit more of that. And, you know, we got some big guys, and one of the most interesting things that's happening is in one weight class, 145 pounds, we have Josh Emmett, who's ranked number 4 in the world. We've got Darren Elkins, who's in the top 10. He's on a 6-fight win streak. That's the longest fight streak in the organization right now. We've got Chad Mendez, who's just about to be reintroduced into his fight game after a 2-year hiatus, who's going to jump right back into the top of the game. And then we've got Andre Feely, that just had a big win. And we've got Rick Glenn that is coming off a loss but is getting better every single day. It's wild to see that pretty soon here our team is going to have, you know, five guys in the top 10 in the weight class. It's going to be interesting to see how that pans out.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, what happens in that situation if someone on the team has to fight someone else on the team?
We haven't crossed that bridge yet, and the truth is there's a lot of guys in that. That's a deep weight class, so there's a lot of matchups to be made. Well, the way I see it is a bunch of guys going for the strap, which would bring it back to SAC, bring it back to the team. And, you know, if it ends up where, you know, somebody's on the team and the other guy is going to get the title shot, I mean, that'll be interesting. We'll have to cross that bridge when we get there. But just kind of cool to see that, you know, this hard work is paying off, and we're really, you know, established as one of, if not the best team in the world.
Yeah, you're sending a whole squad of sharks in there.
Yeah, for it.
Yeah, it's crazy. Chad and I were talking about that too.
Yeah,
you know,
you guys have been sparring for years too. It's funny. Chad's got a cool business that he's been doing. I don't know if you guys know.
Yeah, about that. I've seen it. Yeah, we follow him on Instagram.
Fins
and stuff.
Feathers. And he's got jerky, and he's got T-shirts, and you know, he's finding another way to follow his passion and fund his fighting and mm-hmm. have a good time. So
yeah,
it's been good. Josh, so you've been married with your wife for how long?
5 years.
5 years, but how long you guys been together?
Almost 15.
Holy crap. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts.
That's nuts, man. And so you guys both went to El Camino High School?
Yeah, we went to El Camino. We met my senior year. And then...
El Camino High School is right here in Sacramento. I actually grew up a block and a half from El Camino High School. I used to go when I was just a young kid and go run the track there. My brother was a freshman. His freshman year, he went to El Camino High School. So Nick Cons is out there. Yeah. And then who's the Brad? There's a little Brad guy. He had a bunch of brothers that was a good wrestler from a little bit older.
I'm not sure.
He's
but you guys lived right by Chad Goulden, right?
I'm not sure, Chad Goulden. I lived like a mission.
No, he was like, he was my old high school coach, but he knew your dad.
I knew all those guys. I used to go over all the time and wrestle and whatnot. That's cool. So do you ever go back to El Camino now and give back?
Yeah, it's actually one of my friends that I wrestled with at Sac City and El Camino. He's the head coach, and he's been the head coach for like 11 years now. So I'll pop in there here and there, and they're always talking about like me doing a Josh Emmett camp, and maybe we'll do that soon.
Yeah,
to get some help from you guys, and Chad, and maybe Lance. And
teach a bunch of high schoolers how to break faces.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. Anything else we got here, Greg? You got a?
Yeah, I'm actually curious a little. I mean, I know Uriah knows you very well, but yeah, I'm curious a little bit more about your background. Like, you know, he was talking about how you got inspired to get into the fight game, you know, through wrestling and everything, but. Have you pretty much always lived in the Sac area, or you know, give us the backstory?
I've always lived in Sacramento. You know, I was born in Phoenix, but I've lived in Sacramento since I was 6 months old, and that's how I know so many people and have a lot of connections. Besides the 3 years that I went to the Bay Area for college, but I was still back and forth every once a month or so.
Did you play any other sports growing up?
Yeah, I played everything. You know, I played baseball, football, basketball, really played everything. And I can play anything. And I always thought I was going to play in the NBA or NFL. And then, like I said,
the NBA.
No, but that's what I'm saying. When I was a little kid, I had big dreams. And then I got a little older. I didn't grow anymore. And I was, I knew that was not going to happen. So I found wrestling. I started wrestling. Some of my good friends, they were a huge wrestling family. Mm-hmm. And their dad, he was always my baseball coach and stuff like that in Little League. And he said, I want you to come out and wrestle. And so I went out and wrestled my seventh grade year and did really well. You know, I was 14-0, won two little titles and was hooked from there, you know, wrestled in eighth grade. And then I was the only one on varsity my freshman year. Or that was a freshman, and
that was it.
That's it. I was gonna play I played football my freshman year. I wrestled, and then I was gonna play baseball as well. But then I just kind of wanted a little break. So I just did wrestling and football, and then I wish I would have kept playing football throughout my high school year, but I just really focused on wrestling and went to camps and did stuff like that.
Well,
that's
good. I mean, obviously it worked out now that you're
yeah.
headlining a main card in the UFC.
But I felt like I started to peak later on. You see a lot of guys that are so good in high school and, you know, maybe they kind of fall off in college. Some get better, obviously, but, you know, I started getting a lot better in college. You know, and then come into Uriah's gym and we have some of the top guys in the country, you know, in Division I. So I feel like my wrestling even got better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Some of the guys, Joseph Morales is an example of that. Andrew Coyne is an example of that. Not necessarily the best credentials in high school, but once they got to the team, they really started to like pick it up. And now, you know, you take a guy that was a pretty good high school wrestler but stayed the course and now can wrestle Division I wrestlers all day. You know, I've got a kid, Cleo Romero, that was a high school runner-up, and he's still improving as a wrestler but adding the rest of the game. So it's cool, man. We enjoy having the guys that are from the ground up and built at home, and then we have guys that are imports also from all over the globe that come in. So it turned out to be kind of a cool gig. I think that's kind of it. We'll wrap this one up. I know Josh has some more rest recovery and probably a little bit of running to get going. Yeah. He has a big fight coming up, and we appreciate you spending a little time with us.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Saying hello, and we look forward to hearing more about the path to the championship and seeing that belt sit on the table here.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah, thanks, Josh. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. CaliCast, tune in next time.